I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Big One at One, brought to you by your local Honda dealer. It's time to get to your local Honda dealer for model year clearance pricing. See your local Honda dealer today. Wanted to talk QBs with you, Danny. We can go two guys going in two different directions. We'll start with Tua Tagovailoa, who will start for the Miami Dolphins in their next game. As they have benched Ryan Fitzpatrick, they have won two in a row. They are 3-3. They're playing pretty well on offense, coming off of a 24-0 shutout win of the Jets. He hadn't turned the ball over in their last couple of games, and they're benching him anyway, and a lot of people are saying, well, that's not fair to Fitzpatrick. But I got to tell you, I love what they're doing. They had a plan coming into the season that they'd go into their bye week and they'd go to Fitzpatrick afterwards. They are playing a little bit better maybe than they expected. They're 3-3. They've won two in a row. But they also know what they are and they know what they're not. In a division with Buffalo and New England, they're not going to win the AFC East. If somehow, some way they were able to, and they did emerge out of the East as a playoff team with wins or something like that, they know that they aren't likely to make any kind of a run or win the Super Bowl, and that their future is with Tua Tagovailoa, and that this year is about trying to get him experience for next year. So rather than riding the Fitzpatrick wave, which we've seen plenty of surfers do, and you end up crashing eventually, they're sticking with their gut, and they're going with Tua, even though the timing is a little bit odd, and a lot of old-school thinkers are going to be upset with them. But I commend them for following their plan and for sticking with their process.
Think about them and then think about Washington for a second. They're in second place in that AFC East. They're 3-3. They have an opportunity at going to the playoffs if you do some of the math and things work out. Nope, you don't worry about what's going on outside of your building. You don't worry about the other teams. You don't worry about the trash of your division. You don't worry about what the Jets are doing and maybe win this game or that game, and you play that low-hanging fruit. You don't deal with scraps from the table. You build. They sacrificed players last year, and everyone made fun of them. Everyone made fun of them. Why are you trading Minkah Fitzpatrick? Why are you doing that? Why are you getting rid of Laremy Tunsil? Picks, 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 picks. Correct rebuilding, correct rebuilding, correct rebuilding. I don't care what Ryan Fitzpatrick can do. Ryan Fitzpatrick is not your quarterback in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. Tua probably is, or hopefully is, if you're a Dolphins fan. This is what you should do. Even if you lose this week, even if you lose next week, your plan is a good one, and you stick to it. You rebuild. You do the thing that you are supposed to do. It can happen. Even in this league where everybody wants to microwave everything, it can happen this correct way, where you took your lumps, you lost last year, but with a purpose. None of that, how do you look at the guys in the locker room? Tell them to do their jobs. Brighter days are ahead. Hopefully you're here for them. Please play hard. This is the way that it should be done. I commend the Miami Dolphins. And I look to the Dolphins. Yes, look to the Dolphins as a beacon, as a shining example of how rebuilds work. Now, it may not work. And then Starkey people will tell me that it was stupid for them to tank, quote unquote. That's fine. This process is excellent.
Yeah, I agree with most of that. Probably all of it, honestly. I mean, I would say that they're an interesting example, right? Because you're kind of combating the Haskins decision in some way with what they're doing. And I would point to last year when they benched Josh Rosen, who is Haskins, for Ryan Fitzpatrick, who is Kyle Allen. And they didn't look at the guys in the locker room when they did that. I mean, they basically said, you know, we're stinking, but we need to develop guys while we stink. And we're going to bench the guy that we just traded a second-round pick for, who we don't know if he's any good or not. He's played 13 total games in the NFL when we acquired him, and a couple now. And they went to Ryan Fitzpatrick, the veteran, and we all know what he is. Then they drafted their quarterback because they knew that Rosen wasn't the guy and Fitzpatrick isn't the guy, a la Washington. Haskins is not the guy and Allen's not the guy, and they'll draft their quarterback this year. And I'll agree with you if that next quarterback next year sits on the bench and watches Kyle Allen play a bunch. My guess is that probably won't be the case. But you know, specific to their chances, the Dolphins this year, Danny, have a 34% chance to make the playoffs right now. They could fool themselves. They could easily suck in, you know, eat a liquid diet for a couple of days and say, man, I look a little better. And then go out and do whatever they wanted at a fast food restaurant, right? They're not doing that. They're not allowing themselves to take the bait. They have a 15% chance. I found this website. It's playoffstatus.com, where it kind of gives you every single round possibility. So 34% chance just to make the playoffs, 15% to get to the second round, 5% chance to get to a conference championship game, 2% chance to get to a Super Bowl, 1% to win the Super Bowl, basically, is their odds at this point. If you're curious, Washington, 15% to make the playoffs, 6% to get to round two, 1% or less and everything else. But, yeah, I just like that they are going to their guy here. They evaluated Tua as their quarterback of the future. And you know what they have, too? And I think Washington does, too, with Alex Smith. They got a quarterback who's going to buy into this. Like I don't – maybe he'll prove me wrong and I'll look like a fool, but I don't think Ryan Fitzpatrick's going to come out and be upset publicly or say this was unfair. This is a guy after his own drives that's showing Tua things on the tablet on the bench. This is a guy that when Tua ran out onto the field for the first time with a minute and a half or 2 minutes to go the other day, you know, he was waving a towel over his head and doing the – you know, make it louder, like hands on each side of his shoulder, pumping up the crowd. So I think he's completely bought in and gets it and knows his role, which also makes this so much easier.
No, it certainly does. Certainly does. And again, my point about the veterans in the locker room, they're competing for a division right now. And they're going to go to somebody that may not give them as good a chance in the short term. And I think that's commendable. I think that's toughness.
Though.
I think that's.
I mean,
that's
honestly.
Smart. Who knows? Maybe he does.
Ryan
maybe
Fitzpatrick's
he
a Jag. I mean, if Tua look at the two rookies right now that were drafted in the top 10. Both are playing better than Fitzpatrick. Now, I don't know anything about what Tua's going to do. But my point is, if he's Herbert or Burrow, then you'll take that over Fitzpatrick. I mean, if you're a veteran, to your point, and they go to him after he's had worse practices and he's not as good because they're kind of throwing in the towel just to develop him, you're right. I get it. Can we definitively say that? I mean, is he really not better than Fitzpatrick right now? There's a real good chance that a top five pick is.
Sure. We have no idea. But if you're 3-3 and coming off a win, two of the best games of your season where you won 67-17 over two games and you're going to bench that guy heading into a bye week, you probably would get, in a lot of situations, a veteran grousing going, what the hell? You know, now you're going to do this now? But I think there's clear communication. Again, I'm not in Miami. I'm not reading every article. I don't know. But it sounds like they've got a clear directive. It sounds like they understand there's a big picture at play here, which is something that Washington won't do. So we could disagree about the individual semantics of various decisions, but the big picture is this should always be, if you're garbage, be garbage with a purpose. And Miami was last year and this year. They're losing on their terms instead of doing what Bruce Allen always did, maximizing payroll, a bunch of veterans, and you know trying to find a way to go 7-8 or you know 7-8 wins over the course of a season. They're doing the long-term thing, which I think is smart and commendable.
We're close. Remember that.
We're close.
Baker Mayfield is the other side of this pendulum that swings now. So the Browns are 4-2 in contenders. Here's where they are. They've played the Ravens and been outclassed, and they played the Steelers and didn't belong. They played four other games where they were better than bad teams. And not all of them were bad, but teams like Washington and Cincinnati, they're better than. It stands to reason. It's okay to just say they're a middle-of-the-pack club, probably. They're a lot better than they've been the last few years. They're not as good as those contenders in their division in the AFC North. Baker Mayfield has laid two eggs in those games, though. And really, over the course of the year, even in their wins where they run the ball so much, he hasn't done anything all that impressive. Like in the Washington game, he had a game that Kyle Allen or maybe Dwayne Haskins or, you know, name 25 quarterbacks in the league, they could have that game and play action, hitting a couple of passes here and there, 175 yards on the ground. I was tuned into the radio yesterday when they were asking the question about Case Keenum as opposed to Baker Mayfield. And the case they were making that they're talking about in Cleveland is basically in Minnesota, Keenum's the ultimate backup. We all know that. But occasionally backups can get hot. And in Minnesota, great running game, great defense, great special teams. You know, everything around him kind of buoying him. He didn't turn the ball over, and they went to the NFC Championship game. Kind of fluky with a crazy play. But they made the playoffs, and they were a good team. And their idea is Baker kills us with turnovers. What if we just go to Case Keenum and say never turn the ball over? Now, I think that's a bad idea, and I think they should be playing Baker Mayfield at 4-2. But the fact that that's even a conversation at this point that media members are having tells you a lot about Baker Mayfield, I'd say.
I think there's frustration with him because we're back to – think of the rookie year that he had, where he should have been playing right away, by the way, and Hugh Jackson held him back. And he set the rookie touchdown record with 27 and I think it was only 13 starts, one game coming out of the bullpen. Like, you're going, this is going to be something. This is going to be a, you know, a Russell Wilson kind of player. Again, not with the running, but with some of the outside the pocket, the bootlegs, the athleticism, the scrambling around to buy some time to make some throws that are kind of off angle and funky. They got a winner here. And now you're asking him to do one time he's thrown north of 30 passes, or excuse me, two times in games where they were getting the doors blown off, right? For the most part, he's now doing what you'd ask a Ben Roethlisberger or Joe Flacco to do as a rookie because of how dynamic their run game is and that two-headed monster when it's healthy of Chubb and Kareem Hunt are so good and all these weapons are so good. You're basically saying just do a little bit, and he's not doing that effectively game in and game out. There's a lot of frustration in Cleveland, and I get it. Less is on his plate maybe than ever before, and he's not responding well.
Yeah, if you can't play well in this circumstance, and I think this was a game where he was kind of set up to fail, to be honest with you. That's a buzzsaw, the Pittsburgh defense. You weren't going to win that game. You probably were not going to play that well. But you can't make a terrible decision on your first play of the game and miss a wide-open receiver, and then on the second play throw an egregious pick six and kind of go into the tank after that. I mean, you can go into the game where we all have a realistic expectation you're going to be very pedestrian, potentially, based on the matchup. But you can't be arguably the worst quarterback of the week, which is what happened a couple times now when they've played really good defenses. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Next, the Nats have a new pitching coach as they start to assemble their coaching staff. We've got some thoughts on the guy that's going to lead this pitching staff. We'll do that next. Davey Martinez was extended at the start of the offseason, and because he's on a contract now where he's got a little certainty and some weight to throw around, he's decided that he is going to bring in his own coaching staff. So that meant getting rid of some of the guys he's worked with over the last couple of years, some of the members of his staff that helped the Washington Nationals get to and win a World Series. Paul Menhard was promoted in season during that 2019 magical run. Helped turn the pitching staff around, has been in the organization in the minors for years, was relieved of his duties. Chip Hale, who was a bench coach and a coach on the base paths the last couple of years, has been told he's not coming back, among some of the other changes that they plan on making that have been public. The first hire, and this was expected, was Jim Hickey, who was for a long time the pitching coach in Tampa Bay with the Rays, 11 years from 07 to 17. And then he went to the Chicago White Sox, the Chicago Cubs, rather, with Joe Maddon in 2018, not long after they had won the World Series. They made the playoffs and lost before he was out of baseball this past season. So Hickey worked with Davey in Tampa and in Chicago. Obviously, they're close. He's out of a gig, and Davey thinks he's an upgrade, and they'll bring him in. I'll say that he's had a lot of success. We can go through some of the specifics and the numbers, but he's a 59-year-old who is a well-respected pitching coach, and it's a hire that I like. I don't know how we got here or exactly what was going on, but you got to understand, I think, even the Nats fans that are frustrated by this because these guys are a part of a champion a couple years ago, you get to hire your own people, and Davey really didn't when they took a flyer, so to speak, on him. He'd had 9 interviews. He'd never been hired before. The Nats had interviewed him and gone with Matt Williams previously, and they went back to him and said, okay, well, we're going to bring you in. But they mostly handed him his staff to work with. So now that he's, quote-unquote, proven himself as a champion, he gets to surround himself with people he wants, and he's got more influence.
And I think that's really what this is more about. The thing that's kind of surprising to me is all Paul Menhard has ever done is what's been asked of him, right? I mean, he wasn't necessarily going, well, he's the minor league pitching coordinator or, you know, doing this and that and implementing whatever they want implemented down on the farm, and Derek Lilliquist can't do the job. He wasn't agitating for that spot. So he gets it, and you win a World Series, and not only is he not back to minor league coordinator, he's sort of blindsided and released, and he's gone. And it makes it seem like he did something really wrong or ran afoul of guys. I think that's why Nats fans are kind of blindsided by this, but I think you're right. It's more about who Davey wanted to bring in than necessarily the fault of anybody that was here. In terms of the coach himself, honestly, you know, you look at some of the results of the players and his staffs, he's been very good. Is he better than Mike Maddox? Is he better than, I don't know, fill in the blank of other pitching coaches that have been here? Is he worse? Very, very hard to tell. To me, it's not necessarily, hey, does Steven Strasburg pitch great? He's probably going to pitch pretty great, right? If you were me or the pitching coach, I would go, keep doing what you're doing, Steven. I'll see you this week, you know?
Yeah.
But it's about Joe Ross. It's about Eric Fetty. It's about a couple young arms that graduate, because the Nats haven't graduated guys that have really helped them from their minor league system under their major league staff. They really need something like that to happen. Hopefully he's the guy that unlocks that.
So Hickey's background goes back to 1997 when he was hired by the Astros as a double-A pitching coach. And that year, that double-A team had great results. They had over 930 strikeouts to lead the Texas League. And I think it kind of put him on the map a little bit. He was working with some good prospects. And that's always, to your point, I think the key for a hitting coach, pitching coach, you're kind of as good as the players that you're working with. You might have a good year if Scherzer and Corbin and Strauss throw the way they're capable of. In 1998, the following year, he got bumped up to AAA, the time the New Orleans Zephyrs were the affiliate of the Astros, and they were the PCL champions. They won their first ever World Series, and he was kind of on the fast track, and his name started to go spreading through the minor leagues as a guy who got it. So he kind of kept getting bumped up more and more. He got to manage in the Futures game in Milwaukee as one of the top minor league coaches. And before you knew it, he was hired as the Houston Astros pitching coach in 2004. And that year, he worked with Roger Clemens, Brad Lidge, Roy Oswalt, some other guys like Brandon Backey at the time was a really good pitcher. They got to the National League Championship Series. The following year in 2005, they got to the World Series in his second of three seasons there. Again, you're working with Clemens, Andy Pettit, Roy Oswalt, all finishing the top seven in ERA. So is that Hickey? Is that those guys? I'd say they probably would have been really good no matter who their pitching coach was.
Right.
But he was, at that point, kind of considered, okay, this is a dude that people want to talk to. He links up with Joe Maddon in Tampa Bay, young Rays team. Soon thereafter, they draft David Price first overall to Vanderbilt his first year there. They're in the World Series the next season. So where he's gone, teams have succeeded, pitching staffs had thrived. Whether you give him the credit or the teams were good, whatever you want to say, he goes to Chicago, they're back in the playoffs. He has a good track record, so I like the hire for Davey Martinez. I'm perfectly fine, again, hiring your own guys. We talk about this with Ron Rivera. Ron Rivera essentially just had a big meeting when he got fired and said, wherever I end up, you guys can all come. That's what it seems like. And everyone with the Panthers.
And everyone came. Yeah.
Right. Everyone with the Panthers that was out of a job, and some of the guys maybe that weren't or whatever, got different titles, they ended up in Washington. That's oftentimes what happens. You surround yourself with people you're familiar with. What I care about are those people competent? Are they good? Do they enhance? Do they make you better? And we'll see if Jim Hickey is an upgrade over Paul Menhart, but it's hard to argue with the results. I think he's had a successful career.
He's been successful. To me, the pitching coach, especially when you got a veteran staff, there's either a binary, either you can or you can't. And here's what I mean. When Tanner Roark a couple years ago is struggling, is getting hit around, the two-seamer's not two-seaming, it doesn't look good. Derek Lilliquist didn't help. Brandon Kintzler did. Brandon Kintzler's the guy that's watching him throw a bullpen and giving him mechanical advice and stepping up to fix. That's indicative. That's telling. Most of the time, you don't need to do anything when it's Scherzer, it's Strasburg, it's Corbin or whatever. But when, hey, I'm in a slump or my delivery's not as clean as I want it to be or something is happening where guys are squaring up my fastball. Like this year, for example, when Patrick Corbin's throwing 88-89 and he's got one of the worst batting averages against on his fastball, can the pitching coach say, do this and it'll be fine? Right? And maybe you didn't see that this year. Maybe that was something that kind of led to that. But that to me is where the pitching coach comes in. It's a little bit less impactful maybe than the hitting guy where there's that much more mechanical stuff, adjustments, even kind of a bat to at bat. You're throwing motion at this stage when you've got excellent guys. When something breaks, can you fix it? And it sounds like through his qualifications, he certainly can.
This could be a very, very wrong hot take. But I really think that hitting coach, pitching coach roles, you just accentuated how those guys can help hitters, pitchers, and be good at their job. I think they're not as important as, like, maybe positional coaches in some other sports.
100% agree. And it's not close, Grant.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of my perception. You're better to speak on this as someone who played college at the baseball level. I'm sure you played college at the baseball level. Who played collegiate baseball at George Washington? But I just think what you just said is perfect, right? It's this idea of you see that someone is falling off toward first base or stepping in the bucket or they're dropping their hands as part of their swing or whatever it is, and you can tell them that, and that's your job. That's great. But managing, you know, that's vital. You're making decisions in game. Mm-hmm. Where Maddux was very, very helpful. I think he's a great pitching coach. But Maddux was in the ear of the manager. Hey, I think it was Dusty at the time, but
it was.
Hey, let's not get that guy up right now. He got up twice yesterday and didn't pitch. Hey, that guy's arm's barking a little bit. Let's make sure we don't throw him for a 19th straight day. Like, he was pretty instrumental in that process with Dusty, and I think that's the value those guys can have sometimes, is just being mm-hmm. a liaison, so to speak.
Yeah, I know your chart normally says this guy's going to get lefties out at X percentage. Well, he's gotten up three times in the last 4 days, pitched twice, so maybe that percentage isn't going to work today. That kind of stuff, you're right. Having, like, knowing exactly where every guy is, that open line of communication, the understanding, taking care of certain players, like, This organization's had a bunch of guys with all sorts of rules lately, right, where Doolittle's been a high-maintenance guy. And I don't mean, like, personally. I just mean in terms of getting him ramped up and his stuff. Sean Kelly was that way. And you had a bunch of guys. You can't throw this guy when it's cold. You can't throw this guy when it's hot. You can't throw this guy when the sun's out coming from the east or two straight days or this or that. And managing those things for a team that's trying to compete is very important.
You did play college in baseball, right, though? Was I right about that?
I pretended to be a – yes. That was the perfect phrasing. At the level of college.
Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Speaking of ball weekend, look ahead to Game 2 of the World Series before we get out of here in just a little bit. The news we started with this morning, though, was that the Washington football team could be sticking with that team name next year. Do we think fans would be cool with that? We'll talk about that next. If you missed any part of our show to this point, you can rewind with radio.com or go to grantanddanny.com/audio for our podcast when we are all set and done today. Much appreciate you guys spending a few minutes with us, though. Always means a lot that you're doing so with all the options that you have. We started the show with the idea that the Washington football team could keep that name next year. Jason Wright did an interview with Channel 7's Scott Abraham, and he said that the turnaround to get a new name in place by the start of next football season could be difficult based on the process that they're going through and everything that has to happen. When they initially said that they were going to Washington football team, the perception was on the outside, and I think it was because we were led to believe this, that they were going to make the announcement this offseason. New name, new logo, keep the colors, but a new fresh look and coat of paint. And that might not happen now. And so the question became and is, are you okay with that? Danny, you and I have already answered this. I'm perfectly fine with another year of Washington football team to get it right. I'm perfectly fine if they stick with Washington football team forever. I really don't care what the next name's going to be. You could name them the Penguins, who I despise in Pittsburgh. I mean, it's not going to change me watching the games, me being a fan of the team. And in 15 years, I'm just going to be telling someone I'm turning on the Penguins game without thinking about it anyway. That's how names work. They're all kind of weird at first, and you get used to them.
Yeah, as I've always said, the what they're called is like the 9,000th thing on my list. But it's important to some people, so I respect it. That's why we have the discussion, certainly. But the only thing I would add to what you're saying is, I'd like whatever it is, I'd like there to be some progress. You know what I mean? Like, if it's really going to be the Washington football team forever, I'd like to hear that. I don't want them to settle on that because they couldn't find anything better. That'll feel like a defeat. Throughout this process, I was saying, hey, you guys got blindsided by this. This all came about within a couple weeks. I know the pressure was outside for years, but let's not pretend the thing that changed was FedEx said, that's it. We don't like Dan Snyder anymore. That's what changed. That's what caused this. Not anybody that wants to champion themselves as a hero or whatever else. The pockets got affected. Money got affected. And that was going to change. So all of a sudden, now we have to have this moment. So wanting to flip it over in a second, something that would probably take years of consulting and planning and a smart rollout, what people were asking for it to be done in a couple weeks. And you and I both said, whoa, 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 whoa. We're fine with kicking the can down the road a little bit. let's do some research. Let's figure it out. What's best? Let's involve all the right people, make everyone feel like they're part of this thing, and get the right name, whatever that is. There's not going to be a right answer, by the way. We've gone over that, too. But it went from that to, have we made any progress? Does it still feel like we're doing anything? It's I don't know. Maybe I'm picking apart what Jason Wright said a little bit too much. But it feels to me as though very little has been done on this front. If this was, we're excited about what's to come, but it just takes a minute. Okay. This still felt like, yeah, we're just looking at all the words, all the different nouns and colors and pixels, and people are still sending us their submissions. Tweet it at Julie Donaldson. You know, it seems very strange to me. That's my only, I guess, quasi-gripe with what's happening now, or not happening.
Yeah, so I'm assuming, and I readily admit that this is an assumption, not based on even the comments, but I'm just assuming they've done a lot of that already, and they are further down the road than that comment made us think. In other words, if in fact what he said is gospel and true, and they are still not having meetings where they're debating the specifics on one or two names and filing for a trademark and having some artist render the next logo in anonymity and you know, sworn to secrecy or something like that, then yeah, I would be disappointed. If this is still legitimately at a point where Jason Wright is just doing kind of surveys of various people in and around Washington, D.C., in roles related to the team or talking to sponsors about this, I would be a little bit frustrated, because this all started in July, which was almost 4 months ago now, the very beginning of July, by the way, like the July 4th holiday, in fact. We're coming up on the start of November, so that's 4 months where you could have made a lot of progress here. And I know he wasn't here that entire time, obviously, but Dan Snyder, Ron Rivera were working on this before him. Hopefully he came and picked up where they left off. I have to imagine they've moved the ball down the road a little bit. Because Washington football team as a placeholder is perfectly adequate for me, 1 year or 2 years irrelevant. You also heard a quote he said in relating this to the stadium situation. He was asked about having fans in the stands against the Cowboys, and he said, we're not going to do that. He said, I don't mind working quickly, but I don't like rushing, I think is what he said.
Great line.
And I think you can relate this scenario that we're talking about with the name to that saying as well. He doesn't mind working fast and getting a name, but I'm not just going to rush into something to check a box to say that we did it. So I think he wants to do it correctly. And if that takes time, then so be it. Who cares if they announce the name and the logo next year or this year? Now, other than the excitement that we want, is it really that big of a difference? They've already started playing as the football team. They already have the numbers on the helmets. A second year of doing that is not going to be a problem.
That's not as big a deal, no. I'm with you. And again, these complaints are all relative, right? Like, I'm way more upset about 16 other things having to do with this season and this organization and, like, what Dan Snyder is alleged to have done and the impropriety and some of the embarrassment. There's a million things I care about way more. But so, right, in terms of, like, how big a problem is this, it's not. It's just that I kind of would like to see or hear the sound that they're on top of it. And that's not the impression that I have at this point. Maybe I'm wrong, and it may not be fair. Just simply saying, I think there was a way to deliver this going, hey, you guys, this actually takes a lot of time. And Jason Wright said that to his credit. We've got something we're really excited about. Just you wait. It's going to be great. You know, I almost rather hear that than, yeah, we're not going to do it next year either. You know what I mean? I don't know. Maybe it's semantics.
Do you think fans will be okay with a second year of Washington football team, or will they be upset? I think there's going to be a natural disappointment, but yeah. I get the sense that the Washington football team, when they announced it, was fairly popular just as the short-term answer.
Could be worse, yeah.
I think there's going to be some graveling. There's going to be some upset that it's not happening sooner. I don't get the sense, though, that it's become like all that unpopular. I mean, unless you watch the team and you're frustrated and you're mad at the product and you take it out on the team name, if you're okay with it for a year, I don't know why you wouldn't be for two.
I'm with you. I think the initial grousing has kind of given way to acceptance, which I think is going to be what's happened with anything, with any change, right? The initial grousing will be fast and furious for about an hour, 2 days, 2 weeks, and then, you know, they'll play football, and we get used to it. I mean, we thought, at least I did, I don't know about you, you were better at it than I was initially, but I thought I'd be saying Redskins for 3 years. I've been doing it for 40 years, and now I got to stop doing it, and I'm just going to call them something else. I've made the adjustment surprisingly quickly. You know, I've only put a handful of dollars in the jar. You know, I thought it would be a disaster all the time. I would just casually say Redskins here, there, and everywhere. And it hasn't happened, really, by and large. I think people have gotten used to it. We get used to stuff really quickly.
With Danny, I'm Grant. You are locked into the Fan. Top of the hour, Chad Dukes versus the world comes your way. Let's take a look at the Wednesday night slate in sports next. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Remember when I said Ryan Fitzpatrick would know who he is and know his role and all those things about as well as anybody? He is taking it pretty hard. He says he's heartbroken over the quarterback decision. He said, yeah, I just got fired and I'm on a Zoom call with my boss who fired me and the guy who took my job. Which is true. I mean, it's certainly true. I don't know. A day afterwards, maybe he's stung a little bit, but my guess is he'll be in the film room helping Tua get ready for the game. He's a pro. But he's definitely sad about it, which I mean, he's a competitor. I guess I should understand that. You don't get benched and then come out and say, yeah, man, I'm happy to be a Miami Dolphin. I'm a backup to the guy that's never played before after two straight wins. So I don't know what I would have expected, but by the time the week rolls around, I think he'll remember he's Ryan Fitzpatrick and Tua was drafted in the top five.
I still think he's got a good sense of humor about it. Like, I think he's deadpan joking. But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I could be.
Oh, is that?
Giving him too much
I'm
credit.
Just seeing the quotes. I haven't
no,
seen
the quote's
video.
The quote. Yeah. I mean, he's doing a. I mean, he looks kind of melancholy, looks kind of down, but he's still, you know, with his giant, huge beard. And maybe he is heartbroken. I don't know. But at the same time, he's still going to be a pro. He's still, like, fun to be around. He's still, you know, going to do his. I'm here to drink beer and drink other beer, and I'm all out of this beer.
Did you see that after Tua got to play? This was well before he got named the starter. But he got on the field in mop-up duty against the Jets. Like an hour and a half after the game, the writers are up in the press box writing their stories. And Tua, in full uniform, sat out on the field on the 15-yard line where this drive ended, I guess, and called his parents, who weren't able to be there because of the COVID restrictions and travel and different things. And he just talked to them on the phone about him making his NFL debut. And I guess they've been at every game he'd ever played in, and it was a sad thing that they weren't there. But I thought that was pretty neat, a little story there.
Very cool. Very cool. It's every once in a while you're reminded, not everything is always terrible. Sometimes things can be okay. And it's okay not to have a snarky angle on it. You can just be happy.
Grant and Danny winding down here on the Fan. Game two of the World Series is tonight, so let's start with that as far as your Wednesday night preview goes. The Rays, I guess you could fall behind 2-0 and still not feel like your back is completely against the wall. It would make game three a obvious must win. So you can't call game two that, but it would be nice for them to punch back here, and you feel like you're in a bout where you got staggered, you came back swinging. They give the ball to a former Cy Young caliber arm in Blake Snell, a lefty who's 4-2 with a 3 ERA this year in the playoffs. He's got 19 punch-outs to go along with his 3.20 earned run average. He was really good in a couple of championship series starts against the Astros. He wants to get deeper into the game, though, as he didn't pitch more than 5 innings in those outings. The Dodgers are countering with Tony Gonsolin, young 26-year-old, very long hair and a very beardy beard that he doesn't shave very often. We saw him allow 7 runs in 6 1/3 innings in 2 appearances against the Braves in the LCS, so they're looking for better results for him. A good matchup on paper, I'd say, for Tampa Bay tonight.
Yeah, I think they need this one. Now, that sounds crazy considering what happened in both NLCSs, or both League Championship Series, rather. Astros came storming back from a huge deficit. The Dodgers themselves came storming back from a big deficit. But you can't count on that. To me, I think this would be really good to make it a long series if they could punch back. On paper, even though Gonsolin's got stuff, it's not Clayton Kershaw, Hall of Famer, at the height of his powers, right? This is the night. I would say get back. 1-1, now you got a better chance at a longer series. Because right now, the Dodgers are hot. The Dodgers are rolling, having won multiple straight games in a row, and they're the best team on the planet right now. Punching them in the mouth, making them bleed a little bit, I think would be really good for the Rays to get themselves into a series.
Yeah, plus, and you mentioned this, but, I mean, you got Walker Buehler ready to go. Rested?
Looming. Yeah.
Come on. You got to get this one, you're right. You better take care of the games where it's not Kershaw and it's not Buehler, where you actually might have an advantage in terms of pitching matchup, because those are fewer and far between. So game two of the World Series tonight, we'll see if Mookie Betts can take another step toward a World Series MVP. He is the front runner after just one game. What else do you guys have on the itinerary this evening? Anything fun going on at the house?
Not too special. I'm going to go pick up my oldest. He spent the day at grandma's this afternoon. So that's always kind of a nice little Wednesday thing. It's a much less stressful day for the remote learning. So we kind of have a fun hang out at grandma's all day sort of deal. And he's got to do a couple things as everybody gets their act together. So that's the big plan in the afternoon, is to travel halfway between here and Baltimore to pick up the little guy. We'll do like a prisoner exchange just off of 95.
Is there traffic yet when you do that?
Yes.
Or there is traffic
within the last.
I haven't driven on a highway. Like in months. I feel like
this is worth discussing. By the way, I don't know what's happened. I don't know what's happened, but within the last, I would say two weeks. Within the last 2 weeks, there has been traffic during normal traffic times. I don't know what it means.
People
I don't
back
know.
In the office.
Maybe it is. Maybe it is. People are commuting. Things are happening. I don't know what I don't know here. This is not scientific. It's not just me being stuck on 66 at 10:15 p.m. on a Saturday night.
You're basing this on the construction at midnight on 66.
I mean, during like rush hour times, where we've driven around, had to do some errands and do different things. There is traffic now. Whereas for a while it was I Am Legend. You know, you go, let's go for a drive during rush hour in D.C. and just sort of zip around and do whatever you want as an activity.
I know that we're not going to be working from home forever, and that eventually we will be. You know, probably right after the new year or something, back in the office. But when we moved, right at the beginning of this pandemic, we were shopping for houses and bought a house, and we moved to Lorton a little further away than where we were to get a little more house. Mm-hmm. You'll remember I wanted to go out to Ashburn or Leesburg or if I could work at like Percival or Middleburg. I wanted to just move like way out, you know?
Almost as far as Drab is.
Well, about twice as far, right? So my wife was like, you can't do that. Like, you have a commute. You're going to hate your life. You're going to be miserable. But we haven't done that yet. So, like, this several months, even though this is not – this is a 20-year thing, I keep saying to her, we could have been in Leesburg. I haven't had to leave the house yet. I mean, I'd just be puddling around Leesburg at this point.
Could have just been at home in Ashburn.
Exactly. For Danny, I'm Grant, saying so long. Thanks to Brendan and Tommy for their work on the show. Chad is next. If you missed any part of our broadcast, grantanddanny.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.